you can't. Everyone should ensure their mobile phones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they may have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back in to join the meeting once the discussion on the item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Okay, members, we've got the apologies, and now is the opportunity, any declarations of interest?
Sorry, did you get the apology there, Chair, for Laura Devon?
Yes.
That's okay, sorry, just asked me to make it. Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, Chair, there's also apologies from Councillors Enright and Gibbons as well.
Okay.
And Chair, just to ask, sorry, apologies from Michael Lipsett and Conor Mallon as well.
Okay. Thank you. Members, any declarations of interest? No? Okay. Sorry, members, I seem to have managed to kick myself out of that meeting, which is not to be recommended. Okay, members, moving to item number 3. We get started, yes. Action sheet from the Special Audit Committee on the 13th of September. I'd like to take it page by page first, members, for accuracy. So page 1. Page 2. And page 3. Okay, members, if I could have a proposer and seconder.
Councillor proposed, Chair.
Thank you. And a seconder. Okay, I need a seconder, members. I can't see if you need.
I second that.
Okay, thank you, members. Item number. Similar, no questions. That we move on to item number 4. Which was the Audit Committee of the 23rd of September 21, the action sheet for that. Again, members will take you through a page at a time, so please ask any questions if you have any. Page number 1, page number 2, 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, and page 7. Okay, no questions, members. Then can we have a proposer and seconder, please?
Okay, I'm moved by Councillor Lewis. Oh, sorry, Councillor Hanlon, and seconded by Councillor Lewis.
Lovely, thank you. My apologies, Sarah. I have it now. Sorry, my apologies, members. Okay, item number 5 is the Corporate Risk Register, and Dorina is going to take us through that. Thank you, Dorina.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. So, members, presenting the Corporate Risk Register to you. This was last updated just in December by the quarterly review by the senior management team. And you'll see in the report that the quarter two assurance statements have also been used to inform the update. So no significant changes to the risks and the risk profiles this quarter. You'll see that most of the changes then are updates to actions throughout. So happy to take any comments or questions on that. We are now bringing you the next tier down on rotation of directorate risk registers. So this month we are, or this quarter rather, presenting to you the directorate risk register pertaining to the ERT directorate for your information as well. So Connor is an apology today, but if you have any questions, hopefully myself or Jared can take you through those.
Okay, thank you, Doreen. Members, any questions?
Yeah, Chair. Just another question, really, a comment, really. Again, I was discussing it earlier on, as you know, but it really is in terms of new risks for the council, you know, and it's around, really, the information that we were able to share at some of the meetings. We've been taken into closed session quite often now, and some members are saying we're maybe more often than we've ever been there before. So, and this, in my opinion, can present a risk to the organisation in terms of public perception. And it's just something I want to look, have a wee look at, to see is there, does every occasion warrant going into closed session? Like, just before the meeting went back in and I looked at something about the Greenway, but there was no, there was a publicly quoted figure of £20 million available from DFI, but I couldn't see anything else initially, any sensitive about it that affected any individual person or any tender, because it wasn't even at that stage. So this is leading then to freedom of information questions coming in. And then the question, as you know, from freedom of information, only has to be very specific. So you're getting half questions and then getting half of the picture. And a lot of the especially the press, and they're not all troublemakers in the press, a lot of them are saying, what's the value of are we getting any more, or the public getting from a council meeting? You get a summary at the end, a conclusion, which obliquely mentions some decision that was taken inside it, doesn't refer to anything, and there's nothing really to go on. Now, you know, there has been occasions where there have been leaks, but leaks are always going to happen whether you're in closed session or not. And the worst thing about a leak is that half-truths come out, and the full context isn't even considered by anybody. So I can see that as a risk. It was pointed out to me by a few people, and I certainly would like that looked at and examined and maybe go back and make comparisons over the last number of years of what we're closing out and what we aren't closing out or closing down, as you say.
Okay. Doreen, if you would like to respond, that'd be great.
Yeah. So I suppose in terms of that, Declan, we strive to comply with the legislation, and the Local Government Act very clearly does give us parameters, which you'll be aware that the chair of any respective committee would read out. Each committee that we have of council has a director, which is, I suppose, the lead officer of that committee. And one of the things we do as directors is we review the agendas in advance of them loading on the decision time to make sure that any item that is a closed session item is in closed session because it complies with the requirements of the Local Government Act. Now, I'm not familiar with the particular paper that you quoted around the greenways, but you
did. The very first, I just went in as a matter of interest because it was raised with me, and it was the very first one. And I said I went to ERT. Yes, there's a few going around awarding of contracts, definitely. But then I spotted this one, like there's nothing's being awarded. Or anything, you know, that was the context that I could see. I mean, now maybe I read it too quickly, but that was my opening impression on it. And I'd seen me sitting at meetings before saying, why in the name of blazes are we in closed session of this? Like, it's, you know, estimates of costs, and one thing had to be revisited. So it shows you the accuracy in estimating costs that will influence a procurement system. It doesn't mean anything, you know, nowadays, you know.
I'm not familiar with that.
If anybody has the time to crawl back, which probably you don't, crawl back through some of the things and have a look at, you know, and see was there, was there some sort of leeway there that would, because I do think it's gonna harm the council. It's already harmed.
I think, Rena, is there some criteria that has been agreed and is being applied on a consistent basis?
The Local Government Act, yeah. So,
yeah, and it's just understanding that. I mean, I absolutely take the councillor's point, and maybe there's sometimes not sure why something isn't confidential business, etc. And just to, if you could just reiterate that and give us some reassurance around the application of that throughout the council.
Yeah, sure. I raise that with all of the lead directors then pertaining to that. But I suppose it's important to note that one of the tests that we do run, and we've talked about this at length, one of the tests that we do run ourselves is if the information would be released under FOI, well, then it should be information in the public domain at the point of consideration. But one of the things, I know, Declan, you've mentioned DFI costs when you reference that paper. If we cannot disclose information coming from another public body unless they have advised us that that is public information. I don't know in this case, I'm not familiar with the paper, but there are lots of considerations. One of the things that we do as well is make sure that when we're drafting the bits to be read out for the tape, that we make those as fulsome, so we put as much information as we can into the public domain. Because we do, it is about striking that balance between transparency and accountability to the ratepayer, but we do have to, first and foremost, comply with the Local Government Act. And I know sometimes the press and the public don't like that, but we have an obligation as a council to comply with that act. But yes, I will have a look at that, and I will bring it back to all directors to make sure that they're only putting items into closed session where they are complying with the act.
Councillor McAteer, would you like to come back on that, or are you content with that as a way forward?
Yeah, it's just, well, you know, just for, I suppose for the avoidance of any confusion on it, and not criticising the Act itself at all, I am criticising some elements of its implementation, you know.
Okay, thank you. We have a question from Councillor Byrne. Pete, would you like to come in now?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. On a different item. Unless somebody in on that one.
Okay, Marie's maybe Marie, wanting to comment there.
Yeah, sure. I just flicked through the ERT committee report, and I'm assuming it's December, and it related to Greenwest. There were actually two business cases attached to that, and that would be the reason that it's in closed session. So.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's the paper that Councillor McAteer was referring to.
Yes, but Marie, and I don't want to prolong this any more than necessary, but yes, there might have been business cases, but the substance of the discussion is probably being withheld as a result of all that, you know. Result of maybe some, that's what my idea is, that yes, you know, if there's sensitive information, and even question that, in a business case, but there's probably a lot more of the report that could be shared and could be talked about. And all you have to do is exclude, if there are figures involved, exclude those, you know.
It's possibly one for us to discuss and debate outside of this committee, because I think...
I don't want to prolong it anymore. You get what I'm at, you know.
Okay, thank you for that. Councillor Byrne, would you like to come in?
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Two separate points. But first of all, just to thank Jared for the training. Before we had the audit committee on the risk, it sort of gives us an insight more into the workings of the risk register. I find that things have got fascinating. But when we talked about certain risks across public sector, and we were identifying, you know, top five, top 10 risks across other public sector organisations, it was highlighted to me that a number of those risks I don't see replicated in our risk register. They might be broadly replicated, but again, they mightn't be there in the risk register because they're probably not pertinent to this organisation. So that's not a criticism. I would just ask that when we're looking at audit time associated with certain risks, that we've taken into consideration other risks that are across those public sector organisations or public sector broadly, and that we can at least have some sort of acknowledgement back from senior management that they aren't applicable to our council and shouldn't have their own distinct risk on the risk register. I don't see a risk register that is CR75, like, because, you know, it's hard enough to read as it's CRs at the minute. So just maybe, it's just when you're highlighted down things in training and we look at it, and then we can make that determination, well, is it really a risk that we can just hone in on? But as long as we have done those checks and balances, and Jared, we know what I'm talking about, we can take that off with the officers separately from this meeting. The other issue that I have, and the chair had raised it, in training, and we discussed it in our pre-meeting as well. You see, when I'm looking at the risk register, see if there isn't change. I nearly become blind to some of the things that's on it. Now, this is only me personally. So I suppose humans react to seeing something changing and evolving in living documents. So if something is static and isn't moving, and it's not moving because certain controls haven't been fully implemented and that risk hasn't been reduced and it just stays there, it sort of becomes, you know, I'm sort of more blind to that risk and I see where the changes are. And last month when we had some of the risks merged and we had discussion around it, it was probably most of the discussion that we had in the audit committee on the risk register. See, when we have risks that are sitting, and I am getting a point here, when we have risks that are sitting that we have distinct controls, and I look at the controls and it could be keeping records up to date or ensuring that policies are updated or whatever, that to me is a given. And we might never get down to the target, but we might be able to, I'm going to pull out one of Jaron's 14s here, of tolerating the risk as it is. So can we get an update on those risks, even if it's annually, that we can make changes to the risk register? Well, we are going to sort of tolerate something where it's at, we're happy where it's at. I know that's something that you do above the audit committee, but presenting risks that aren't changing over a 12-month period is sort of difficult for us to monitor. You know, when you're talking about keeping policies up to date, keep records up to date, make sure whatever, that's a given. They're not really controls we can take in to reduce that score of the risk, if you know what I mean. So it sort of keeps... it'll keep me a bit more active on the risk register when I can see change. Or instead of, and maybe just to leave it at this, whereas I'm looking at a target score that we need to get there and I can see the controls, and I don't believe that's possible, or I don't believe we should be spending as much time on that, and we just accept it. I mean, we get an update every 12 months on that. Not every 12 months, but maybe keep us up to date on that sort of thing. You know the idea I'm talking about.
Okay, Doreena, would you like to...
Yeah.
The point Councillor Byrne has raised, and one was in relation to risks that, sorry to interject there, just that Jared put up on the slide earlier on, the training, which was very useful and informative in relation to probably future planning of staffing and the whole area around that. So maybe if you could address
that. Yeah, that's what I didn't want to go into. Well, the specific of that, I was talking about a certain risk that was in and around diversity, skill set of workforce or whatever, and that might be workforce that you have in place that had lacked the skill set. Not necessarily, people think that straight away. It could be workforce that you don't have in place, that you're, you know, people are covering certain things, and that lack of skill set in there, say if Jared's doing a job of where you need somebody else, that would cause some sort of a risk to the organisation. And that sort of flagged up across other public sectors as one of the top risks, along with climate change and stuff like that there, and we discussed it earlier on. But when we look at the audit time that is sort of put from the council towards those risks, as we looked at, it's maybe 25%, you know, in terms of how high the risk is for other public sector organisations. So maybe even just the caveat coming back to us as an audit committee that, yes, we've looked at this risk, we recognise that it is applicable to other organisations more than the council. We don't feel as if it's a risk in itself that needs more audit time, but we've addressed it. And that sort of gives us the clarity. And that's in and around skill set diversity of staff and stuff. That's that specific point, Chair. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Chair, if I can make a suggestion, because I suppose we had a... first of all, apologies, I wasn't able to make the training this morning. Something else came up that I got pulled into. So, but I know Brona and Jared sort of briefed me in our pre-meeting. It strikes me, listening to you councillors, that, and from the discussions that we had, and Jared's probably going to kill me when he hears what I'm about to say here, but... what you aren't seeing, I suppose, in this risk register is what we actively consider, but maybe doesn't make its way on to the risk register. And there are lots of things around that when we're doing our quarterly SMT review, we do a piece of work every quarter called Horizon Scanning, where we look out into the future to say, you know, the risks, there's potentially risks coming down the line, but are they, is it right to start doing something to address them, et cetera, et cetera. And that's probably, and we then do a big annual risk workshop. And what I'm wondering is, would it be an idea to do an annual risk workshop with councillors that lets you really get into that process of horizon scanning, you know, looking at all the things that we discount. So that's something that we'll maybe take away and try and incorporate into your, you know, the annual training that we do with you, because it'll probably give you that assurance, Pete, that you're talking about around, you know, other public sector risks that, you know, and where do they sit against this council? You know, how do we bring internal audit recommendations, external audit recommendations, all of that into our thinking when we're arriving at the directorate and the corporate risk registers. One of the ones that I know you did talk about this morning was that talent management one and succession planning. And that is something that is getting an awful lot of consideration and debate, both within our own senior management team and councillors. You'll know about this to a certain degree, but more widely across all councils. There's a big piece of work ongoing with the University of Ulster, which we fed into as a council, around succession planning, especially at senior positions within councils, because it is recognised there's problems coming, there's risk coming in this area. Local government as a sector is finding it very difficult to recruit into senior management positions. They, for a number of reasons, and it's how do we address that? SOLAS are, as a collective of chief executives, are talking to the civil service, are trying to look at what we do as a sector. Underneath that, and actually, our own considerations around planning for the future are very much with talent management, growing our own people, developing our own people in mind. That's all been taken into consideration. We have identified a number of areas within the council where we do think there are problems coming in terms of our future skills. And certainly you'll see over the next couple of months us coming to you with ideas around apprenticeship schemes to grow our own talent internally. And we're also starting to talk to colleagues across other councils about potentially more sharing of key roles, because we are realising there are certain skills shortages in Northern Ireland where we might have to share resource across councils. So there's a lot of things that are going on in the background around the talent management piece. And I know that's one that you talked about this morning. So, but I will probably think then about maybe doing an annual risk workshop with you where you can really get in underneath that, if that would help.
Pete, do you want to comment just on what you think of that as an idea?
Yeah, and get lynched from all the other councillors for putting another workshop on. it's maybe you don't have to go as far as a workshop. If we were cognizant of discussions on certain risks that you are looking at as senior management, that are separate than the risk register, then that's the communication channel opened up. So if you had maybe annually where there are certain risks that you're looking at, like a register, that are separate from the risk register, that's presented in front of us, that would give me the confidence. But I suppose we have an ability to raise new risks that we believe as members of the audit committee. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, we fall into the trap of raising risks that you've already identified yourself, you're already discussing outside the audit committee, but is not on the risk register. And it's just sort of closing that. Whether it takes a workshop, the NDA, yeah, fair enough, but maybe just a simple register.
Okay, leave it with us to have a think about as to how best we address that. Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that. In relation to Councillor Casey, would you like to come in at this juncture?
No, I think we've moved on from the item now, Brona, and an audit is a serious business, and I was going to maybe inject a bit of comedy into it, but Declan just might not have liked it.
We can always do the laugh, you know. Okay. I was just going to ask a quick question then in relation to the role that the backfill of the role in relation to Jared. He's obviously continuing to do the work in his new seconded role, and just to give the members an idea of progress or what's been done to backfill his role and what's happening in the meantime, just to give us assurance that everything's been covered. Dwina, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So, as you'll be aware, members, Jared was successful. Sorry, Jared, I've been talking about you. But Jared was successful in taking on the AD finance role, which was an internal opportunity offered on a six-month basis with potential for extension. Because that was quite a sizable duration of contract, we tried to then fill the audit services manager post again on a temporary basis. We were unsuccessful doing that, and we tried a number of avenues. We advertised that internally, advertised it on the interchange, which is to all other public sector bodies. And then we went out to agency on two occasions and were never successful in filling the post. We have, I suppose we are sharing the role, if you like. Jared still retains part of the role and is looking after and servicing this audit committee as part of it. And Kate Bingham, who you'll be aware of, who would carry out our performance audit work, has kindly agreed to step out, step in to help us in some of that role as well. We've been a bit fortunate, I suppose, in COVID and has not allowed as much work on the performance audit side of the house as normal, and so Kate has had a little bit of capacity to be able to assist us. So I'm content at this point that we are covering the role. It's not a long-term solution, so we will need to address it going forward. But at the minute, that is Jared's substantive post to return to as well. So, but I would be content at this point. It doesn't pose us any serious governance risk, Chair.
Okay, Adriana. Thank you for that. Appreciate that. Okay, members, well, can we have a proposal seconder to approve the update to the corporate risk register? And to note the ERT directorate risk register as well.
Proposed.
Proposed by Councillor Byrne and seconded by Councillor Casey.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to item number six then, if we could ask George to take us through prompt payment statistics, please.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, this is just a standing agenda item, and the period we're covering here is quarter two, so from the 1st of July 21 to the 30th of September 2021. So 88% of all invoices were paid within the 30 days, and the average number of days to pay suppliers was 23. So this was slightly down on quarter one stats, which were 92% paid within 30 days, and the average number of days was 20. So it's over the summer months, and historically the stats have fallen when people are on holidays. So we're just compiling the quarter three statistics at the minute, so we'd hope that the stats are back up to around the 90% mark again.
Okay, thank you, Jared. Anybody any questions? No? Okay. Could I have a proposer and seconder to note the report, please?
It was proposed by Councillor Hanlon and seconded by Councillor McAteer.
Okay, thank you. Just to let you know, Sarah, that's not coming up on my screen, just in case you're wondering
why
I'm not reading it out. There's nothing coming up on mine now at all. Okay, thank you. Okay, members, if we can move then to item number seven, which is the Members Register of Interest. Jared, I think, is going to take us quickly through this.
Thank you, Chair. So just prior to Christmas, the Democratic Services Manager sent out an email to all members just to remind them of their responsibility to keep their register of interest up to date. So four members replied stating there had been no change, and five have advised of amendments on Democratic Services were updating the schedule. So members are just asked to note the report.
Okay, thank you, Jared. Unfortunately, there's nothing coming up on my screen, so I can't see if anybody has a question.
Councillor Hanlon has a comment.
Thanks, Sarah. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to raise, just in terms of the Register of Interest, so we're asking for this to be brought back every 6 months at the minute, but if only nine members are responding, do we need to maybe tighten up on, you know, what we're asking for a response to? You know, are we taking it that the other members who haven't responded have no change? Are we asking for a nil reply? Or, you know, what is the point of actually bringing it back to the audit committee? So it's just to kind of tighten up on it a wee bit.
Chair, can I come in on that?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yeah, I suppose just, members, to remind you where this all started from, we do a big exercise every year after the AGM when we have new members, to ensure that any new members and all existing members have a register of interest up. it came to light, I think, through an audit. I think it was the Northern Ireland Audit Office, in fact, that at one member had not completed a return despite, and this is where this all started, because we decided that this was a risk to council if we weren't aware and other committee members were not aware of potential conflicts from their fellow members. We agreed, Una, to, I suppose, issue you a reminder. And that's all that we can really do as officers. As councillors, it is your obligation to keep your register of interest up to date. We are merely issuing a reminder. Now, we agreed that we would, you know, we agreed through the audit committee that we would do that. We don't necessarily need to report that back to yourselves. But it's all we can really do is issue a reminder. It remains the obligation of every member. So in that way, there's not a huge amount of benefit in terms of us seeking a nil return, because any conflicts that are arising then are for you to manage, you know, as a councillor. It's not for officers to manage those conflicts should they be identified. We merely have to ensure that the register of interest is there, it's available, it's publicly available.
I get that, but I think from our perspective on the audit committee, it's what our expectations are back. So we know that 9 people replied, and there is the onus of responsibility in each individual councillor. But I think it would be better, if possible, to have a nil reply. Then we know from an audit perspective that there is no change, and then the councillors are actually confirming that as well. I know I'm probably guilty of it. I probably saw the email and didn't reply to it because I know we don't have any changes. But, you know, I suppose, like, what is the point of bringing it back if we know that 30-odd people haven't responded to it? We don't really know whether they've changed or not. But, you know, I suppose it's up for discussion among the committee to see what they think as well. I just think it would firm it up and it would make it less of a tick box exercise and more robust for us to know that councillors are actually being, you know, taking it seriously and being aware of it.
Yeah.
Audrina,
go ahead.
I suppose it is a tricky one in that, you know, we're only doing this 6 monthly, so we can't give you an assurance. We'll never be able to give members an assurance at any particular point other than 6 monthly, you know, that a member has their interest up to date. The responsibility will always rest with the member. So we could seek nil returns on a 6 monthly basis, but I'm not sure that would give you a full assurance, you know, from month to month on each committee that your fellow members have got their register of interests up to date. It's never going to be full.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I get where you're coming from, but I still think if there was a nil return, then at least we know as an audit committee that they've read it. And if they've made a mistake or if they haven't declared something, then we can go back and say, well, you got the email and you replied to it, you know, but maybe I made over the top about it, I don't know.
Could I bring in Councillor Byrne to make a comment and then take it from there?
Yeah, but I back what Una's saying, and I think it makes it easier for both Sarah, for this committee, to have better information coming back if we do have an ill reply. I understand what you're saying, Doreena, that you will never have the assurance. Listen, we're never going to have the assurance. If we had 41 replies, you're not going to have the assurance. We just had the assurance that 41 people replied because, you know, we're in 2022 and the amount of politicians that are bloody liars is, well, I'm not getting into that. But, you know, you're never going to have the assurance. So I think if you have a nil reply, it puts the onus back on to the councillor to say, as long as the email goes out from Sarah, if there's no changes, a nil reply is accepted as no change. That goes back to the council to say if there was changes, it's on them in the future because they had a nil reply to that, which meant that there was no change. Because getting 9 out of 41 gives me no confidence in the audit committee that we are up to date in registers or the register of interests, you know, when you've got 30 plus people in there that you have no idea what changes came and what they're speaking on. So I think a nil reply is the perfect proposal from Councillor Hanlon, or Councillor Hanlon, sorry, and I'll back that. It makes it easier.
Trina, would you like to come back on that? I appreciate this is a different...
No, we can absolutely, we can do that. If councillors are, you know, feel they'll get some benefit from that, absolutely. We can seek nil returns, that's fine, yeah.
Okay, members, I take it there's no other comments and that you're in agreement with that as a way forward? Okay. Okay, thank you for that. Can I have a proposer and seconder to note the report and then to also agree that as an action point going forward, seeking the nil returns? Proposer by Councillor Lewis. Just need a seconder.
Councillor Hanlon has seconded.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Okay, item number 8 is the Local Government Auditor's Report 2021. And Karen Beattie from the Northern Ireland Audit Office, you're welcome, Karen. If you'd like to take that report for us, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say, the report is in your pack. It came out shortly before Christmas, so I'm quite sure while you were sitting eating your Christmas dinner, you will have been reading this thoroughly. The report it comes out once a year and basically covers the local government auditor's work for the previous year. So in this case, this report deals with 1920. So slightly obviously behind times, because I suppose more than anything in our heads, I at least remember certifying the 2021 accounts more recently. There are various statistics in the report that I can almost say the word, including things like prompt payments, including things like absenteeism, which has obviously changed over time, partly to do with COVID, and it ebbs and flows in any case, and sort of which councils are doing better than others, maybe in some instances, and that can be learnt from. That was really all I was going to say on it, but happy to take any queries or comments.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Members, any comments or questions for Karen on that particular item? Not seeing anything there, Karen? Okay, if we could have a proposal and seconder to note the report, please.
Proposed, Chair.
Thank you.
Proposed by Councillor Byrne and seconded by Councillor McAteer.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Karen, if we could move on to item number 9, the annual audit letter and the report that was charged with governance. I mean, you will appreciate we just got these. Not really what we would expect, because we just didn't have time to reflect over them and read them, but
I appreciate that, Chair. Apologies, but this has obviously been a difficult year for us all, and just timing wise before the Christmas holidays, just trying to get stuff through the printers, etc., was difficult, and I had alerted Gerard to the issue, but I suppose rather than move it on for the next audit committee, where there's not a huge amount to say, particularly in terms of the report to those charged with governance that you've seen the draft of, we thought it was best just to bring it to this committee, but absolutely I apologise, and this certainly isn't the norm. In terms of the annual audit letter, it deals probably with more recent work that we've undertaken, so it will have dealt with the broadly with the outcome of the audit of the financial statements and proper arrangements for the year end of 2021. It also covers a range of key statistics which you may find helpful on page 6, and deals with I suppose things that we've also considered during the course of our work, such as the governance statement, internal audits work, the audit committee, and then also just has a note in terms of absenteeism, which is an update now from that quoted in the Local Government Auditor's Report. So that's a more up-to-date figure based on March 21 year-end figures. That was really all I had to say on that, but happy to take any comments or questions.
Okay, members, I don't see any questions there, Karen. Thank you. If we just want to move, we'll take the two together. If you want to go ahead then with item number 10, I was going to do the two at the same time, but okay, if we have a proposer and seconder to note that report, that'd be great.
Proposed by Councillor Murphy. And seconded by Councillor Byrne.
Okay, thank you very much. Karen, that's great, thank you. If you take item number 10.
Sorry, Chair, we just need to go into closed session for item.
Oh, beg your pardon.
10 to 20.
Sorry, that's what Dorina was saying to me. Sorry about that. I'm just watching this, I'm not getting the communication through on my meeting chat there. Okay, members, items 10 to 20 are deemed to be restricted under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information and the public, may by resolution be excluded during these items of business. So I need a proposer and seconder to go into closed business, please.
Proposed by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor McAteer.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, members, if we go back to Karen now to what we've agreed.
I'm sure if we just wait and the recording is starting again.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, please. Thanks.
Thank you, Louise. Okay. Item number 10, the final report to those charged with governance. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Lewis, it was agreed to note the report. Item number 11, update re-audit recommendations on the risk profile. On the proposal of Councillor McAteer, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the update in relation to previous audit recommendations. Item number 12, update re-fraud and whistleblowing. On the proposal of Councillor Hannan, and seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the update in relation to fraud and raising concerns cases, which was detailed in Appendix 1. Item number 13, quarterly report re-single tender actions. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor McAteer, it was agreed to note the quarter 3 update in relation to single tender actions. Item number 14, ASM Internal Audit Summary Report. On the proposal of Councillor Byrne, seconded by Councillor Casey, it was agreed to note this report. Item number 15, ASM Internal Audit, IT Systems and Security. On the proposal of Councillor Casey, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed to note this report. Item number 16, ASM Internal Audit Programmes Unit Financial Assistance. On the proposal of Councillor McAteer, seconded by Councillor Byrne, it was agreed to note this report. Item number 17, ASM Internal Audit Follow-up Review Re-Implementation of IT Strategy. On the proposal of Mr. Councillor McAteer and Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note this report. Item number 18, ASM Internal Audit Asset Management. On the proposal of Councillor McAteer, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note this report. Item number 19, ASM Internal Audit Estates Management and Security. On the proposal of Councillor McAteer, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note this report. And item number 20, Performance Improvement Audit and Assessment. On the proposal of Councillor Hannan, seconded by Councillor Lewis, it was agreed to note the Performance Improvement Audit and Assessment Report 2020-21 contained in Appendix 2 of the Office's report. Whew. Okay, members. That brings us to item number 21, which is the Mid-Year Assessment Performance Improvement Plan. And I believe that's Karen again. Is that correct? No.
No. So, members, this report provides an overview of Council's progress in implementing the performance improvements objectives between April and September 21. So, this has already been approved at the December SPNR committee. So, it's just for members to note at all committees. So, if members are content to note the report.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, I got mixed up between that and the previous one there. Yes. Okay, members, I take it there. I don't see any questions. Unless, Sarah, can you see, like, mine's nothing further? Sarah, is that right?
Yeah, there's nothing. There is a real delay, a real lag here. I don't know what's going on with it, but no, I don't see any questions.
Oh, okay. Could I have a proposer and seconder then to note that report, members?
It's proposed by Councillor Byrne.
I
Seconded by Councillor Murphy.
Okay, thank you. That members leaves us just two circulars. And if I could take them together, get a proposer and seconder to note both of those, please.
Proposed by Councillor Byrne. Sorry, proposed by Councillor Lewis and seconded by Councillor Byrne.
That's great, thank you. Apologies for that delay. I presume it's happening both ends, so it's a very strange one, a new one. Okay, members, that brings us to the close of the meeting. I just want to say thank you very much for your attendance today and your participation, and wish you well and stay safe during these difficult times. See you all in April. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair.